Good evening. I'm Sam, an alcoholic. How about a seventh inning stretch? Do it. Come on, you guys, settle down or I'll have her Al-Anon group release you. Why, wouldn't you hate to be released by that bunch? Oh, God. Be afraid to look in the mirror. There wouldn't be any reflection. I should tell you I'm the alcoholic child of an adult. I like all these titles. Boy, there's an awful lot of titles out there now, isn't there? They're all over the place. I haven't found any about hostility yet. That's what I'm into. Anybody here ever been hostile? I have problems with that. Yeah, I came out of the womb like this. If I had a light and something to read, I wouldn't have come out at all. But my Aunt Bessie said I came out because I'd written on all the walls. As a child, I was dangerous with a crayon. Or anything else. I was a rotten, obnoxious child. By the time I was 5 years old, I chewed tobacco. I smoked big black cigars. I wrote on every wall I could that was look blank. And my Aunt Bessie would give me a quarter if I would say fuck in the grocery store and embarrass my mother. So my mother sentenced me to 8 years in a Catholic school for the cure. And it took me 2.5 years to learn to say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. Up to and including that time, I stayed every night after school. But then I finally learned, and then I became an example to the other little guilt-ridden urchins that went there with me. I got straight A's. I became an altar boy. I sang in the choir. I did my time there, my 8 years. I got out. I went straight to a reform school. Because I'd been in the family business, which is stealing. And I went through puberty in about 20 minutes. Got out of reform school, and I was nothing but a horny little kid loose on the streets with nothing but a hard on and a bad attitude. Which was pretty much what it was when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Not much had changed over a period of time. If I had maybe a little stronger Al-Anon, I might not have drank at all. But I come from a family of alcoholics, and I promised myself I wouldn't end up like them. However, by the time I was 21 years old, I started drinking. I'm a late starter, but I got started and I really did it. I realized after starting what a fool I was for not doing it earlier. And I drank and used as long as I possibly could and then about 2 years longer because of my stubbornness. The first year I was drinking, I found out about drugs. I smoked a lot of non-habit-forming marijuana. I took a lot of amphetamines because I bullshitted myself that they enhanced my intelligence. And all they did was speed up my mouth. So I had an amphetamine mouth and a Demerol brain and got into a lot of trouble. I got into all kinds of trouble in every place I went, and so after a while, I didn't go very much. I hung around with other phony intellectuals like myself. I didn't read books. I read book reviews. I was in a hurry. And we just talked, that's all. Nothing ever happened. Nobody did anything. We liked it when it rained, and we could sit around and cry about the condition of the world and listen to a lot of singers that leave you with no hope. And I've always been attracted to manic depressives. Being one myself, of course, and I was a witness to a killing, and I knew how to be an alive witness, and so I ran. I went home to Mama, and Mama had been to Al-Anon, and she had those little beady eyes and that smile, and she got me up against the wall and released me. Told me I could stay there a few days, then I had to get my ass out of there because I was loaded. And I said, Mama, I am not loaded. And of course I was. I had also told my father that I wasn't loaded. He had come to rescue me some months before that. And I said, get out of here. Mind your own business. I never felt better in my life. And I was lying on the floor at the time with wet pants. And I had what I used to call vodka polio. I couldn't move, but the mouth was going. While I was there at Mama's, my youngest brother came running from the police and others, the same as I was. I was trying to beat a subpoena, among other things, and I did. And one morning, he and I were puking together. And he said to me, you know, if our luck holds out, we'll be dead by noon. After puking, he felt a little bit better, so he said, as soon as we get off of this one, let's really go on one. And that's how my life was, all over the place. I moved to Venice, California, and I lived there for the next close to 30 years of my life. I lived in Venice for about 2 years. I moved into the worst place in town. A manic depressive little girl lived next door to me, and naturally we fell in love. She would come home from work every night, brush her teeth, turn on the gas, and go to bed. I loved the way she rationalized and blamed everybody else. I thought I was the fastest gun in the West. You know, it's your fault. Really fast. But she could do it. She had a boyfriend she had to get rid of, and the only way to get rid of him was to shoot him, so that's what she decided to do. Simple solutions to things. And as she was pulling the trigger on the gun, he had taken the bullets out. He was a very wise man. She's pulling the trigger on this gun, and she's saying to him, you son of a bitch, it's your fault. You've made a killer out of a nice girl like me. Yeah, it's his fault. I always blamed everybody else. There's never any other way. I lived there for 2 years, and I called my father at Christmas time, which was the only time he would accept a collect call from me. And in his sneaky way, he said, well, what did you get for Christmas? I said, I got 2 gallons of wine and a 500-pound Benzedrine tablet. Which is what I had fantasized about. I was going to hack at that thing with an ice pick and rock it to the moon. He said, well, as soon as you're through with that, why don't you clean up your act a little bit and go to Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, what for? What do I want to go over there for, those morons that sing hymns and picket liquor stores and pass out literature on street corners? You see, I'd heard about what went on at meetings from people who were sitting on the next bar stool. I had a few clues along the way. There was a woman that I used to see once in a while in a bar there in Venice, and I hated her because she'd always say to me, my God, you ought to quit drinking. If there ever was anybody that looked like 40 miles of bad road, it was that broad. And I'd say, why don't you mind your own business? I can't help this. I'm an alcoholic. I have to drink. I come from a family of alcoholics, and I'm just like my Uncle Louie, and he drank a pint of whiskey every day of his life, and he lived to be 90 years old, and after he'd been dead for 3 days, he looked better than you do right now. Always with the mouth and the rationalizations and the excuses, always the excuses. My prayers always consisted of plea bargaining, deals. I'll do this if you'll do that, that sort of thing. And my prayers, well, they weren't much anyway. Kind of a crisis Christian, as it were. Wasn't even a Christian, because I had a lot of times when I had so much hate in me, I'd be out in the backyard. I'd say, go ahead, blow your damned horn. I don't care. End all this goddamn mess we're in here. I hate all this. I was that full of hate and resentment of everything and everybody. And so this was the mess that I brought to Alcoholics Anonymous. For some reason or other, I paid attention to my father that Christmas, and it took me 2 days, and I cleaned up. I quit everything. He said, don't smoke any marijuana before you go over there. You'll hear more. So, I wondered how he knew about that. I'd never mentioned it. Anyway, I went to the first meeting, and I left at 10 o'clock in the morning to find Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was 10 minutes of 10 that evening before I finally walked into a meeting. It took me that long. I'm dingier than hell. Somewhere along the way, I'd picked up a trombone. I don't know where I got it. I'm not a musician. I don't play any musical instrument, but I had a trombone. And I staggered into this meeting, and there was a lady sharing at the time, and she said that she'd wet her pants twice and she came to AA. And I thought, uh-oh. Wait till they find out what I've done. So I didn't think anything about wetting your pants. It happened all the time, because I'm a lower companion, if you haven't figured that out by now. I didn't seek anybody, I was. I used to drink in a bar over there in Venice. It had a sign on the door that says men's room. You open the door and you're in the parking lot. Anyway, I stayed sober and I went to a meeting the next night. And I went the next night. I stayed sober and clean for 10 days. Well, nobody had mentioned marijuana, and I hadn't. Nobody had mentioned pills, and I hadn't mentioned them at all. I told people I had a slight problem with the bottle. That's all I would admit to. So I smoked a joint. And I've been to some dead-ass meetings, and I thought, well, I'll giggle a little now. I smoked that joint, and I got thirsty, so I drank. And then I got drowsy, so I took some amphetamines. A natural progression for me. I stayed loaded for a week. Now, I'd heard about lower companions, and I knew that someplace in the city of Los Angeles there has to be a lower companion group. So I quit drinking and using one more time, and I went back, and I walked into a club where I'd gone to some meetings, and I said, well, is there a lower companion group? There's got to be one around here. Guy says, I have just the meeting for you. Come on. He took me over to the corner of Pico and Alvarado in Los Angeles, and there was a group there at the time called the End of the Line. And that sucker was the End of the Line. The beginning of the meeting, the chairman pounded the gavel down to start the meeting, and he said, well, we don't read here. He said, there's no traditions. It's every man for himself. He asked for announcements, and a guy stood up and said that his announcement consisted of he was sinking into a depression. He said, I think I'm going to kill myself this week, so I won't be at the meeting next week. I want to say goodbye to all my friends. And I felt at home immediately. It was, found people I liked, even though one of them was leaving. And, about 10 minutes into the meeting, through the side door came three dykes. Two were sober and one was drunk. And as they came through the door, the drunken one dropped her purse and out fell a gun, a bottle, and a dildo. Standard equipment, I guess, for a purse like that. I don't know. I've never asked. The two sober ones got to fighting over the contents of the purse, and the chairman made them leave, and they left the drinking one there, and she sobered up at that meeting, and she has been sober ever since. And she was pretty upfront about things, but then, she was, and still is, she's 6'2". She had a flat-top haircut and had several rather obscene tattoos all over the place. And when she introduced herself, she said, hi, I'm Aggie the Dyke. And Aggie's the type of girl that if she says sit down, my advice is sit down. She's one tough broad. Sometime later, she and I went to the Brentwood meeting in Los Angeles, which really wasn't ready for all that then. She and I sat right down in the front row, and she got up to get us a couple of cups of coffee, and the guy next to me says, who in the hell is that? And I said, oh, that's Aggie the Dyke. And He waited a little and he says, God damn, I bet she could kickstart a 747. Now, Aggie is still sober and clean today, and she says that she's sober and clean because she was made welcome at that group, the end of the line group, and I firmly believe that that should say it for Alcoholics Anonymous, that anybody that comes in here, I don't care if you're a borderline Al or not. Come on in here and use this thing. I used to belong to a group in Venice, California, where there was a couple of ladies there. One of them said she was an acute social drinker, whatever the hell that is. She stayed sober, so we celebrated a year for it. I was lucky enough to find other lower companion meetings after that. There was another one up the street on Vermont that was called the Bar None. Loved those groups. They saved my life. I learned quickly to identify with the emotions. Now, I asked a man to be my sponsor that I met at that very first end-of-the-line meeting, and his name was George, and he had a rather loose program. About 2 weeks into my sobriety, George had 8 weeks ahead of me. It was the type of group where they handed out 30-minute, 60-minute, 90-minute chips. Anyway, George and I were on our way to a meeting, and we stopped to get something to eat, and George ordered a ham sandwich and a bottle of beer. I'd been sober long enough, and I said, George, I think beer is a no-no. George said to me, beer is a beverage, punk. Yeah. Within a year after that, George had 3 more drunk driving charges to add to his list. His lawyer said, George, leave the state or you're going to jail. Some years after that, he was shot and killed by a bus driver in Santa Monica, California. Bus drivers usually just kick your ass off the bus or call the cops. This one shot George through the heart. Now, what he'd done to that bus driver to antagonize him that much, I don't know, but I don't think I want to know either. And so much for beer as a beverage, punk. I had sense enough to know from the very my beginnings that it's all going to have to go. So when I tell you that I've been sober, that's exactly what that means. I haven't smoked any marijuana, and I haven't taken any pills, and I haven't had anything to drink. And I know some people that are into marijuana maintenance. That's the reason I'm talking about that. They think it's just fine to sit around and do that. I'm sorry, I can't do that. It's those things are too dangerous for me. As I said to my sponsor one time, I told him all these things. I had to get another sponsor, of course. George had wandered off. And I picked one with bullshit filters in his ears, but I didn't know that at the time. And so he could explain things to me, and I told him all the things that I'd taken, and I said, you see, I'm of an addictive nature. And he said, no, you're not. You're a pig. I could understand that. One of the best definitions I've ever heard of an alcoholic is a person who can use up a year's supply of anything in 2 weeks. I had to get around to checking out a lot of things in my life that I definitely did not want to look at ever. Better to be buried. Some of those things are going to the grave with me. I'm not going to talk about it. I ended up talking about the whole works, everything. I have nothing to hide, and that to me gives me freedom. That's only happened because I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and began to work those damn steps. I was afraid not to. That's why I worked them. And then the next time around, I worked them because I wanted to, because I was into... I heard a guy say, I'm here today to continue my sobriety. And I thought, yeah, that's what I'm here for, too. I want to continue this. And the man that I picked for my sponsor that had the bullshit fillers in his ears, I heard him share at a meeting. And he said, I'm sober today, and I'm not unhappy about it. And, of course, that was my problem. I was unhappy about a lot of things when I was sober. I had to have something to bend reality because I still hated it. And I've had a hell of a time getting rid of some of those things and some of the depressions, too. I'm either way up here or way down someplace. There never seemed to be any balance or any middle ground in my life. And after I'd been sober for a while, I decided that big book's badly written. And it... I could do a wonderful rewrite on the damn thing. no thanks. I don't want to do that today. I kind of like it the way it is. I'm not into adding much to it other than my experience, strength, and scar tissue. Get your own hope. I don't know where it's at. It may be in the coffee, but I've had some wonderful times here. I've had some terrible times here, and that's what you're going to have. I just trust people that don't have mental breakdowns on a regular basis. I don't trust people that say, oh, it's just marvelous, just marvelous. It gets better and gets better and gets better. It has not been my experience. What has gotten better for me is my ability to cope with some of that shit. And I hear people say, I've never been to a bad meeting. And I think, come with me. I'll show you a few right up the street. And what's wrong with that? I don't give a damn about that. Christ, I've been to meetings. I've had better flashbacks than those damn things. I don't care. After I'd been sober for some time, I decided I was going to be the best member of Alcoholics Anonymous that ever was. I was going to 12-step everybody, whether you wanted it or not. I was dangerous around meetings and clubs and places like that. I just sat there in a chair and waited for a newcomer to come through the door. I had radar. I could get them. The manager of that club and my sponsor got together, so they used to send me out on fake 12-step calls to get rid of me. Being an AA fanatic, I brought people back. Couple of ding-dongs floating around that don't know they're in here by mistake. And I had what I thought was some spiritual experiences, and I was a borderline spiritual giant. I was ready to put my name in the yellow pages under higher powers, waiting for a vacancy in the Trinity. Talked to my sponsor about placing the book that says being rocketed into the fourth dimension or whatever the damn thing says, and he said, well, you're an AA skyrocket, all right. He said, that's somebody that's standing still with their ass on fire. Oh. He said, you're really more like an AA astronaut. That's somebody that's in orbit around their own ego. He could always translate for me. He could always tell me in one line. And sometimes I'd say to him, well, you old wet brain bastard, just let me alone. Then he would say to me, did you hear that noise? I'd say, what noise? He'd say, I heard your mind close. I've discovered for myself that I can't accrue sobriety. I can't stack it up. I need to keep coming back to these damn meetings. I see some people that are with some long-term that they wander off. I consider myself long-term. January the 11th of this year, I was sober 34 years. Yeah, that's a long time in the... In the life of a human being, that's a hell of a long time. In the life of an alcoholic or dope fiend, it's a goddamned eternity unless you find something. Hell, I'm too old to slip now anyway. Got to keep coming back. And I don't want to miss anything. I've had so damn much fun in recent years watching and being part of newer people's lives. I don't want to miss that. Hell, I was at a meeting not too long ago, a beautiful young girl sitting next to me, and she was crying. She lost her boyfriend, and she just, her therapist said, oh, you're a schizophrenic, and on and on. And I said, well, Libby, have you tried older men? I told her I didn't care if she was schizophrenic. I'd have sex with both of them. Well, if I'd stayed home, I'd miss that. See? So I go to a fair amount of meetings. I don't want to miss a damn thing. A couple of years ago into our little group came a dude who... And a biker... And, greasy, grubby biker, and he was limping, and he was crying, and something I hadn't seen very often. And he sat down, he cried through the whole damn meeting. And finally, at the end of it, he said, "I just want somebody to kill me." And I didn't know what to say. I said, "Well, would you settle it if we just take you over in the corner and beat shit out of you?" It was the end of the meeting, and we got up for the Lord's Prayer, and he wouldn't get up. I was lucky enough that the very next day I was going to a meeting where I knew there was going to be a lot of bikers, and I said, "Come on, we're going to this meeting." And I drug him over there, and here was people that he knew, that he'd known for years, and here they were in a meeting, and they were clean and sober, and I just stood back and watched them. And the change that came over him right there in front of me. See, if I'd stayed home, I'd miss that. You can stay home and watch Slipovision all you want to. That's what my sponsor used to call it. I said, "No, it's television." He said, "In your case, it's Slipovision. Get to a meeting." You can always get one of those damn machines, push a button, tape anything you want, and then watch it. That's what I do. If there's something I think's that important, and there isn't. I haven't seen anything on there yet that's going to do me that much good to what's happened in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know sometimes I sound like a pimp for AA or whoops. I've got a list here of 23 words I can't use. I've already used four of them. Okay. Anyway, I don't know any place else to go that works worth a damn. I used to know a guy in L.A. He'd go into all these treatment centers and he'd say, "Give me the best sobriety money can buy." And he said, "Now I came to one of these meetings and I paid $4.50 for one of these books." And he said, "You know, I've been sober ever since." Oh, really? Logic of that. I like that sort of thing. Not too long ago, I saw a girl come into a meeting and she hauled off and slugged her boyfriend. She said, "You son of a bitch, you took advantage of my defects of character." I wouldn't want to have missed that. There's a lot of important things that have happened in meetings that have literally saved my life. Where else can you go? Where else can alkies and drunks go? I don't know of any place that works worth a damn where I've had as much fun. The most wonderful things in my life I've learned right here, not any place else. And I'm nosy. I've been to therapy. I've been to group therapy, nude therapy, up yours therapy, primal screams, anal screams. It always came back to, well, why not work the steps? That's what my sponsor explained to me. I flew to Akron, Ohio one time to visit the AA shrines. I came home from there and I'm telling him all about these pictures and all these wonderful things I had seen. And he says, "Yeah, I know, anything but work the steps." Okay. And so I've been very lucky in my sobriety to have run into wonderful, wonderful people that have helped me when I could not help myself. I still have down times. I still get depressed once in a while. And I want you to see it. I don't hide anything anymore. I spent a bunch of years when everything was just wonderful. I tried to live up to my nickname, and hell, I got that damn thing because I'm hostile. Somebody hoped I'd live up to it, I suppose. But I'd rather be just a human being who is living, experiencing, feeling, and doing things and spending my time here on this planet instead of waiting for the right time. If you're wondering when the right time to work the steps is, it's now. Don't worry about overshooting the field and having your picture in a stained glass window in some club someplace. Or end up like, you know, you could be a cult figure too. They have a lot of those west of here someplace. And have you read his book, As Clancy Sees What Bill Thought He Saw? I got to hang out with old Doc Smith, one of the co-founders of AA, in the 12 and 12, where he says, "We hold to no glorification of the individual." Not the 12 and 12, it's his story in the big book. Anyway, "We hold to no glorification of the individual." And he also goes on to say that the steps are rarely too hard
for
it's your fault. See how quick I am and blame it on somebody else. It says the steps are rarely too hard for those who really want to stay sober, and I firmly believe that. Do you know how lucky we are to be in this room? I don't know where you spend a lot of Friday nights and Saturday nights, but I thought my name was Get in the Car, Punk. Over there again. That hasn't happened in a long time, and I like that. There are people in this room that I've known a long time, and I like that. I like the continuity of that. We are very lucky, those of us that are in this room. I know some of you aren't here. That's okay. It is. Trip out. Whatever. Have a good time here. Enjoy yourself. Spend this. I learned that from, you should pardon expression, an Al-Anon. A writer named H.L. Mencken. He died a few years ago, and his will consisted of one sentence. Being of sound mind, I spent it. I equate that with my time on this planet. I don't know how long it's going to be, but I got to tell you, I'm spending it. I ain't waiting for the right time to do it. I hesitated for a lot of years. Well, it's got to be right. I don't want anybody to see me make a mistake. I don't want to do it wrong. I don't know what the hell wrong is anymore. I just do it. Get out there and live. Experience, feel, do things. Work those steps. Meetings, meetings, meetings. How long does it take to say, don't drink and go to meetings? It doesn't take that long. The rest of my story is just what happened to me, my experience, strength, and scar tissue. I can tell you that I'm very glad to be in this room tonight. I live in the here and now, and I practice that right here because I listen to chapter 5. Every time it's read, I listen to it. I don't care who reads it, I listen to it. And I've heard some rather strange things come out of there some nights. Some years back, I was at a Thorazine group in a treatment center, and this dude was reading chapter 5, and he got to the part where it says, we are not saints, and he read it, we are now saints. He stopped and looked around, and he said, isn't that wonderful? You're in for a rude one when you get off of those damn pills and get out of here. Do you remember an actor, Bela Lugosi, that played Dracula in the movies? Well, he came to AA years ago, and we asked him to read chapter 5 one night. That comes under the heading of an experience you must not miss. It took him 25 minutes. That guy wasn't acting. He talked like that all the time. We had Dracula read chapter 5. You can't beat it. Where else can that happen but right here? So I'm glad I was here tonight so as not to miss a damn thing. Thank you for letting me share.